What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Oh, my friends, hello. It is the holiday season, and I am, of course, Henrik Kuto, your host and narrator, here bringing you some spooky on the weekly. And for the next few weeks, everything is going to be a little bit festive. But with all of the murder and decapitations and all the other mayhem that really is what makes the holidays great. So I hope you guys are ready for a whole lot of holiday fun. We've got our first holiday story of the season coming right up, courtesy of Rob Fields. We'll be visiting Strickfield, and it's going to be a good time. But I just want to take a second to mention that I am feeling very holiday-y. I had a pretty good Thanksgiving, all things considered, of course. And now I'm sitting here in my robe and in Ohio right now, this day, probably not tomorrow, but right now there is snow on the ground. It is kind of sort of a winter wonderland. My dogs are both mountain dogs with big thick fur, so they're loving it. They're laying in the snow and playing around and being goofs, and I am feeling very festive. But of course, the story I'm bringing you tonight, it's festive in its way. It just might also have an axe murderer Santa Claus, you know, for taste, to add a little spice. So we're going to get to that story in just a moment, but I want to tease, please tune in next week, because we will almost certainly have a big surprise announcement that we want to get you all involved in. But for now, I think it's time, my friends, to listen to the story. Christmas Rage by Rob Fields. December 23rd, evening. Strickfield Town Center Mall only seemed to be a hopping place around the holidays. The vacancies left during the usual 10 months out of the year were mostly filled by seasonal stores. There was even a Santa Claus house in the mall's center court. Families would line up with their children, many of whom had Christmas lists to give to Santa. But on this day, things were about to take a macabre turn. Santa Claus had just taken his seat on his throne. Templeton Mirren, the owner of the mall, and his family were right there in front of him. Santa just sat there and looked right at them. Templeton appeared to be patient. When Santa's silence got to be too much, Templeton leaned in and whispered loudly, "If you don't get your act together, Stanley, you'll be enjoying this Christmas on your fucking welfare check." Stanley Monroe was always tapped to play Santa Claus from Black Friday until Christmas Eve at the Strickfield Town Center Mall. But as Santa slowly stood up and glared at Templeton Mirren and his family, he seemed to have a foreboding presence. Then Santa opened the door to his house and received several screams when the slain, bloody body of Stanley Monroe just fell out onto the porch. The family scattered in different directions. Santa took his time as he reached inside the house and pulled out the same bloody axe that he had used on Stanley earlier. Then he marched toward Templeton Mirren, raising his lethal weapon. Templeton Mirren turned and yanked a nearby father right in front of the Santa. The father never uttered a peep as Santa buried the blade right in his head. The other bystanders were too frightened to see what Templeton Mirren had done. They never saw him or his wicked wife grab their children and leave. From there, Santa pulled the axe out of the father's head and buried it into another bystander as it came upon a midnight clear, slowly began to play over the mall speakers. Christmas Eve morning. I awaken in a different room and remember that I'm here at Franklin Sloan's house. Franklin invited me to come home with him for Christmas. Franklin and I have been seeing each other since late August. In fact, he's been my only companion this semester. After I take a shower and get dressed, I hear arguing downstairs. I make my way down and stop short when I hear that I'm the topic of discussion. Actually, it's more like Franklin's parents are giving him a hard time about me. The more I listen, the more I hear his father, Joseph, and his stepmother, Delphine, just discouraging him. His dad tells him there's no way that a big-titted putana like me would ever care for him. They tell him that I'm just using him for my own selfish ends. Franklin argues back and tells them that I'm nothing like that. He tells them we've been seeing each other since the beginning of the fall semester. He asks them what I could possibly be using him for. Here's the irony. I am using Franklin, but not for the reasons his parents are implying. They think I'm with him for money, or that I'm waiting to humiliate him. I'm fully aware that people look at Franklin and decide that he's the biggest nerd there is. Do you have any idea how many times I've heard people whisper that to each other when they think I'm not listening? I even hear those same people wondering how someone like me would even be with Franklin. Delphine tells Franklin that I'm way too beautiful for him. She even tells Franklin that I would never have sex with him, that people like me belong with fraternity boys. Yes, I certainly could have had my pick of a fraternity boy or even a jock. The problem with those types of guys is that they would only want to have sex with me just for a short time. They would not want to commit to me. No, I need much more than they're willing to give. For those of you who haven't been following me since the beginning, from the time I came into the world, I have never felt so much as a single emotion. Perhaps my being emotionless is why I'm a serial killer. Your society has labeled me the angel of death because I destroy those who prey on innocent people. I suppose the closest thing to emotion that I feel is my ever-insistent bloodlust, which pushes me onward to claim my victims. In fact, I'm feeling the urgent need to kill right now. I make my way to the dining room. The family doesn't hear me come in until I'm right there, right when Franklin yells at Delphine, "That's your problem. You always think everybody's out to get me." Well, rage isn't like that at all. Franklin becomes quiet when he realizes I'm here. The family is just looking at me now. "Perhaps I should just go," I say. "Clearly I'm not wanted or welcome here. I'll just get my things and go back to my dorm." Delphine looks sternly at me. "You heard everything?" I nod once. "I did. And you're wrong about me." I fold my arms in front of me. "Please enlighten me. What do I hope to gain by using Franklin?" Delphine takes a deep breath. "Do you see yourself, Reagan? Do you see Franklin? Do you see how completely mismatched the two of you are? You can have any man you want. Why would you settle for Franklin?" While I myself don't have emotions, I have come to understand a great deal about how emotions can move people, both positively and negatively. Watching enough television and being around Mama long enough will do that for someone like me. So let me get this straight. Just because I'm a beautiful girl and Franklin's a nerd, I would not want to be with someone like him? Then why would I date Franklin? Why would I agree to come home with him for Christmas? Delphine glares at me now. "Well, I don't know. Why don't you tell us?" "I agreed to come here with Franklin because he asked me to," I reply. "I wasn't going home for Christmas and Franklin didn't want me to be alone. I'm thinking he invited me out of the kindness of his heart. That's why I choose to be with Franklin. He's kind to me. He's never once tried to take advantage of me. I enjoy his company." I unfold and lower my arms. "I can't believe that you and your husband would cut Franklin down like this, especially you, a church minister." Delphine took over being the minister of Strickfield Community Church after the scandal with Minister Darren Harlow years ago. Yes, it's the usual type of scandal you read about, with children. After Harlow was removed, Delphine became the new minister. She had to work very hard to keep the church going, but she managed to do it. I was a freshman in high school when this happened, by the way. Delphine's been quite strict on Franklin ever since, according to what he's told me about her and from what I've just witnessed. I put a comforting hand on Franklin's shoulder. Are you all right? Franklin shakes his head. Can we just leave, Rage? Yes. Yes, we can, I reply. Go pack a few things and we can have Christmas at my dorm. Franklin leaves the dining room. His parents only glare at me before I turn and head back up to the guest room to pack my things. You're thinking that I want to kill them both, right? Nope. They're both innocent, so I can't kill them. Ah, yes. Now we're getting to what I want to tell you. I currently have an even greater need to satisfy. Even more than my need to kill. Now, while I don't feel anything emotional, I do feel things that are physical. I know when I need to eat, drink, sleep, clean my body, seek comfort. I did say that I'm looking to use Franklin. As of late, I'm feeling the need to have sex. I was able to get by for many years without having to fulfill this basic need. Now, my sex drive is becoming as insistent as my bloodlust. It's because of this that I've come to realize that I need a mate, a constant companion. I need someone who can be good company for me and satisfy my sexual desires when the need arises. In turn, I would be just as responsive to my mate. Would you call me a primal girl in spite of my highly developed brain? Perhaps you would be right. Franklin Sloan is one of the few young men at Strickfield University who's taken an interest in me. Over time, he's shown me that he is both a suitable companion and an intellectual peer. I really don't care that Franklin is a skinny nerd who talks about chess or contemporary movies. I don't even care that the rest of you in the female population are repulsed by him. Unlike you, I don't have it in me to be repulsed by him. On the other hand, I don't even have it in me to be able to love him. Regardless, Franklin has proven himself to be a suitable companion for me, and my desire is for him to be my mate. Franklin comes and gets me. You ready, Rage? Yes, we can go. We head downstairs to the front door. Before we leave, Franklin turns to his parents. I really thought we were going to have a normal family Christmas this time, even with my bringing Rage. But I can see now that's never going to happen. Come on, Rage. Let's go. Once more, Franklin's parents exchange looks. Then I turn and leave with Franklin. Franklin is settled in my dorm room. I didn't have a roommate during the fall semester. The only reason I'm allowed to stay over the holiday break is because I'm attending classes here at Strickfield University next semester. Franklin looks pretty down. I'm sorry you had to see that back home, Rage. We're both sitting on our beds. I reach across and take his hands. May I say something? He raises his eyes to mine. Sure. I know you're probably having your doubts about me. Please don't. I really do want to be with you. But why, Rage? Why are you still with me? Delphine's right. You can have any man you want. I could ramble to Franklin about why I want him, but I've learned that actions can speak a lot for a person. Still holding his hands, I move across to Franklin's bed. Then we kiss. The more we get into our kiss, the more I'm feeling that I can't hold back anymore. I need him so desperately. I let go of his hands. Franklin is surprised when he sees me stand up and take off my clothes. Once I'm naked, I pull back the covers on my bed and lay down to face him. It's just you and me, Franklin. The dorm is all ours. I want to take this next step with you. If you do too, then come be with me. I only want and desire you, Franklin. Franklin trusts me enough to where he knows I'm sincere. He removes his clothes and climbs into bed with me. Christmas Eve, late afternoon. The Strickfield Community Center was always a place where parents could bring their children on Christmas Eve for things such as Christmas stories, Christmas cakes and cookies, hot chocolate, and visiting with Santa. It had been just as much of a tradition as the fact that each and every household in Strickfield would be decorated to make the village look like a winter wonderland, with the exception of the walled-off property that belonged to the Mirrens. In fact, Delphine Brewster Sloan helped run the establishment, along with a few other mothers. Delphine was making more mugs of hot chocolate when Mrs. Patterson walked into the kitchen. She gave Delphine a look of desperation. "Mary, what's wrong? Hasn't our Santa arrived yet?" Delphine asked. Mary Patterson reached out, stopped motionless for a moment, then fell flat on her face to reveal the axe that was sticking out of her back. Delphine screamed, then she looked up and screamed even louder as the bloodstained Santa Claus stormed in and retrieved the axe from Mary Patterson's back. Santa looked right at Delphine and watched her scream when he drew back the axe. Somehow she forced herself to duck. When the axe blade became embedded in a cupboard, Delphine shoved Santa down and ran out. Delphine tried to yell for everyone to leave, quickly. The shrilling scream of the Santa Claus from hell overshadowed the soft Christmas music. Then more screams overshadowed Santa's as he chased after people while swinging the axe, sinking it into a few more parents. Delphine grabbed a folding chair and moved at Santa to try and keep him from killing any more parents, or even children. Santa howled with rage and disarmed Delphine with a few hard swings of the axe. Santa shoved her down and raised the axe for the kill. Delphine held her hands up and screamed as her life flashed right before her eyes. Christmas Eve evening. I awaken and know that Franklin and I are spooned up together. We spent much of the afternoon having sex. Franklin has definitely proven to be my chosen mate as he satisfied my every desire. I, in turn, focused to satisfy his. Then we fell asleep together. My need for sex is satisfied, for the time being. However, my need to kill is as urgent as ever. I manage to slip out of bed. Franklin is still fast asleep. I need to go out and prowl for a kill. Since it's Christmas Eve, I don't really think I'm going to find anyone. I may end up having to wait until the day after Christmas to look for somebody. My bloodlust is demanding satisfaction, but I'm not going to take an innocent to do it. I get dressed and grab my smartphone. I leave the dorm and begin my walk around Strickfield. If Franklin texts me, I'll just tell him that I'm picking up food for us from either Andy's China Garden or DeNoyer's Grill downtown, which are always open. If I had emotions, I'm sure it would simply amaze me at how this village goes all out for many of the holidays, including Christmas. Every house is decorated and lit brightly. Some of the yards even have animatronics. In spite of all this, I still continue to feel my constant numbness. It isn't long before I hear the sounds of police cars in the distance. I decide to go and see what's going on. I know I'm only a police intern, which is why I'm not being called. Strickfield PD only calls me when it comes to detective work. If there are that many police cars, it's probably something more dire that doesn't require detective work. Just the same, I'm going to go and see for myself. When I get to the scene, the Strickfield Community Center, Mayor Patrick Gunter recognizes me and waves for me to come over. "I know you've been helping the police, but this doesn't require you tonight." "Can you at least tell me what's going on?" I ask. Mayor Gunter tells me that there's an escaped lunatic from Glenview Asylum inside the building wearing a Santa Claus suit and killing people left and right. He mentions how this Santa left bodies all over Center Court at Strickfield Town Center Mall last night. As Mayor Gunter keeps talking, my bloodlust is going crazy, commanding me to claim this Santa. Just what Mayor Gunter tells me alone is enough to where I don't have to do my usual research. But the question now is, how do I get inside the community center without the police seeing me? Then I immediately have a plan and proceed with its execution. I say goodbye to Mayor Gunter and wish him a good holiday. I know the village of Strickfield very well, thanks to all the maps on hand at the police station, including the one for the sewer system. Because of my highly photographic memory, I immediately remembered the way into the community center, through the sewer tunnels. I open a manhole cover down in the crawl space where the shower pipes are located and come out that way. After putting the cover back on, I begin my hunt for this Santa. My bloodlust is nagging at me now. It doesn't take me long to locate Santa. He's got a few women trapped in the kitchen, and then I immediately recognize Franklin's stepmother as one of them. When we started seeing each other, Franklin told me that Delphine volunteers her time here when she's not being the minister for Strickfield Community Church. It looks as though Delphine got beat up. but she's still alive. I know that Franklin would be devastated if anything were to happen to his parents. The two of them put Franklin down, and yet he still thinks the world of them. I literally don't understand it. Just the same, I know I've got to do something to save these people. Santa never says a word. He just glares at the eight women he's holding hostage. He even raises his axe and brings it down in front of them, making them shriek or scream. Even I understand how cowardly it is for an empowered male to attack a helpless female. I tighten my fists as my bloodlust now screams for me to take his fucking life. I must use my head. I can't just go in there and fight him. It would be different if Santa wasn't toying with those women. Then I move stealthily into the kitchen. He doesn't see me as I carefully slide open a drawer and pull out a kitchen knife. All I have to do is just draw it back. Then I'll fling it right into his back. As I raise the knife for the kill, I get a text chime on my smartphone and know it's from Franklin. That throws off my plan as Santa turns and sees me with my knife raised. He screams and rushes right at me. Delphine is surprised to see me now. "Reagan, no!" she cries out. When Santa reaches me, he swings the axe wildly. I quickly hit the floor and feel the rush of the blade go right over the back of my head. As I quickly turn onto my back, Santa raises his axe and brings it down. I turn over again and hear it hit the floor. I get to my feet and kick Santa in the back of the knee to take his leg out from underneath him. Santa growls and falls to the floor. I still have the knife in my hand. Before I can raise it to stab him, Delphine surprises both of us by crying out and ripping the axe away from Santa. "Reagan, get out of here, now!" Delphine cries. Santa quickly gets back to his feet, then he reaches out and grabs the axe, having a struggle with Delphine. I don't see the other women that were with Delphine and determine that she must have gotten them out while I was distracting Santa. I'm definitely ready to stab Santa now, but I know that I can't let Delphine... Wait a minute. She won't know that I'm a serial killer. Killing Santa would just be a matter of helping Delphine... of self-defense. Neither Delphine nor Santa can see what must be the evil glow in my eyes that all of my past victims have seen. All I have to do is move up behind Santa. Delphine will be splattered with his blood once I slice his throat, but common sense gets the better of me. I can't let Delphine see just how violent I can truly become. She might tell Franklin, and I would possibly lose my mate. I have another idea. I quickly make my way around to where Santa can easily see me. "Hey!" Santa's eyes are on me as I pull my Christmas sweater up and show him my large breasts. "Peek-a-boobies!" His eyes are locked right on my breasts, which gives Delphine the advantage. She yanks the axe out of Santa's hands and swings it to catch him right in the gut. He groans and stands for a long moment. I pull my sweater down as Delphine removes the axe and nails him one more time before he finally goes down. I quickly pull out my smartphone and call the police. I get Mayor Gunter and tell him that everything's all right, and that Santa is slayed. My bloodlust is screaming at me for a fresh victim, but I had to give my kill to Delphine to keep my secret. Delphine and I are alone now after I finish talking to Mayor Gunter. She turns to me and gives me a stern look. "Really, Reagan? Showing him your dirty pillows?" I look sternly at her in return. "You are still alive because of my dirty pillows. Never forget that." Delphine and I keep glaring at one another. Finally, Delphine softens her expression and sighs. She looks around and moves to make sure that we're truly alone. I can't imagine why she would need to do that. She returns to me. "Yes. You did save many lives today, Reagan." Then she leans in and says quietly, "I know who and what you are. Don't try to hide it from me. You are the angel of death." Then she backs away to get my reaction. I just look at Delphine. "I think you're mistaken." Delphine shakes her head slowly. "I'm not. You don't know, Reagan, but many years ago, you saved many lives that night, including mine." Just then, Mayor Gunter comes in with some police officers. He points right at me. "Reagan Devereaux, over here, now!" Delphine mouths to me, "We'll talk later." I nod to her and address Mayor Gunter, who gives me hell for not keeping my distance on the count of my being a college intern. At the same time, he congratulates me on being the hero. Of course, I make sure that Delphine is given her fair share of the credit, since I didn't stop that Santa from hell alone. Christmas afternoon. I look into the eyes of Templeton Mirren after I remove his blindfold. Then I remove his wife's. I have both of them secured to tables in their basement. Then I remove their gags. "What the fuck is this?" Destiny Mirren demands. I move to the front where they can see me. I have a remote control in my hand and I turn on their television. "I have a little video here that I'd very much like the two of you to see," I tell them. I play what is the security camera footage that was taken from the Strickfield Town Center Mall. Could I have gotten any more lucky? Chief Kaczmarek was a little strapped at the station, so he asked me if I'd stick around and go through the security footage from the mall. After texting Franklin and letting him know where I was, I went to the station and looked over the footage. Then I saw the angle to where Templeton Mirren had grabbed an innocent man and pulled him right into the path of the killer Santa, just so he could preserve his own life. His wife had seen what her husband had done and wasn't concerned in the least. She only moved to get Templeton and the kids out of the mall quickly. Neither Destiny nor Templeton looked back. After finishing the footage, I stop the video and look at them. "Any questions?" "So what?" Destiny groans, looking as annoyed as she sounded. "All this over an insignificant man?" Templeton adds. "It looks to me as if your family could have easily gotten away, but you grabbed that man and pulled him right in front of the killer, guaranteeing his death. In effect, you killed him in cold blood. Your wife saw you and didn't care, in effect condoning what you did. So now, I'm going to claim the both of you. Your children are with their grandparents. I've even disabled your cameras and your security system. It's just the three of us here. I even have pictures to display of shady bank records and illegal money laundering. I even found some darknet stuff that they were involved in. Too much to list here, but seeing the security video from his own mall was more than a red flag for me. Normally, I'd have killed them just based on that, but I wanted more to give to the police. After all, these two are from the infamous Mirren family. The two of them are quite emotionless. The only difference between these Mirrens and myself is that I was naturally born without emotions. These two are of great money and privilege, so much that they just stopped caring. I'm wearing a plastic poncho and have an axe cradled in my hands. Oh, wait. It looks as if they do know fear. They see my evil glare and beg for their lives. Oh, but it's far too late for that. Templeton and Destiny Mirren, let the punishment fit the crime. Destiny screams as I bring the axe right down on her face. And I feel so much better. Now that my bloodlust is finally being satiated. Christmas evening. Delphine called Franklin and made things right with him. She even told him to bring me back to the house for Christmas dinner. I agreed when he asked me, and all was well. Franklin's dad still gave me some distrustful looks, but that was it. Delphine asked me to help her in the kitchen so we could have our little talk. As it turned out, Delphine had indeed discovered my secret. When she said that I had saved the lives of her and many children that night, it was because she had discovered Minister Harlow's terrible secret. She had tried to stop him on her own using the legal system, but his influence was too strong. She decided that she would bring him down alone, even if it meant breaking the commandment regarding killing. As it turned out, I had read the story about Harlow in our newspaper in North Ridgeway. I came to Strickfield to claim him after I did my research. I broke into Harlow's house, not knowing that Delphine was already there ahead of me. I ended up finding five children that Harlow had locked up in his basement. I freed them and told them to keep quiet. Harlow wasn't expecting a high school freshman girl to come for him. After going up to the second floor and beating the living shit out of Harlow, I tied him up to his bed and castrated him. Even then, I remembered Mama's words about making the punishment fit the crime. Delphine had been hiding in a closet, possibly waiting for the right moment to strike Harlow herself, and discovered that I was the Angel of Death. After cleaning myself up, I gave one of my burner phones to the kids and told them to call the police. Delphine told me that after I had left, she had explained everything to the police, leaving me out of it. Delphine gave me a big hug and thanked me for what I had done, today and back then. She promised me that she would keep my secret. The only thing she asked was for me not to hurt Franklin. I, in turn, promised her that I wouldn't. Delphine never so much as gave me or Franklin a hard time ever again. That night, Franklin and I go back to my dorm. After we have sex, Franklin and I talk. He tells me that he only wants to make me happy. I tell him that I am. Well, in my own way, I'm more than content on having Franklin Sloan as my mate, and I tell him that I'm not leaving him. Franklin has a realization. "I have something for you, Rage." He gets out of bed and brings me a small gift-wrapped box. I unwrap and open it to reveal his high school class ring. "It's not much," Franklin tells me, "but I know how I feel about you. Maybe Dad and Delphine are right about you being too good for me, but I need to know, Reagan Devereaux, will you marry me?" "I will," I say without hesitation. Franklin is speechless in his emotions, but he finally finds himself and puts his ring on my finger. I return the favor by giving him my high school ring on a necklace. I only wish that I could feel the love that Franklin feels for me. Regardless, I will be a good wife to him, as he will be a good husband to me. So, this turned out to be a very good Christmas for me after all. Merry Christmas, everyone. Don't be naughty. Doesn't that just warm the cockles of your heart? There we go, a happy ending for basically everyone, and another spooky trip to Strickfield, the fictitious town for which Rob Field's stories take place. And I love that feel. I love that vibe of a town. Every time you listen to a weekly spooky written by Rob Field, you get to learn a little bit more about the community, the people, and the mayhem that happens in Strickfield. So thank you, Rob, for another great story and for kicking off our holiday season. Speaking of thanks, I want to say real quick, a huge thank you to our Patreon supporters. We have some Patreon supporters who are specifically podcast boosters, and one of the things they get is this shout-out, which is to Karen Wiemet, Jeff Hilton, Craig Cohen, Rob Fields, and Kevin Fry. Thank you guys so much for helping us make the show happen. And if you're a new listener, please consider throwing us a little bit of support, especially around the holiday season. We could all use a little extra help. If you go to weeklyspooky.com, you can find out about the Patreon. You can send us a tip. You can buy merchandise. It's awfully cold out there, kids. You need a hooded sweatshirt that has a bloody handprint and says Weekly Spooky on it. Well, we got that. We got winter hats, etc., etc. But I don't want to make this all about sales. I'm just excited. So I'm going to leave you with a little tease, which is that next week, we should be able to, and I have to say should because I'm not 100% yet, but we should be able to announce a brand new book that is produced by me and written by one of our Weekly Spooky alumni and features a story concept you might recognize. So that's the tease for this week. Next week, hopefully, we'll be able to fully announce it and even tell you that the book is for sale. But anyway, my friends, I'm going to get out of here and go enjoy some Christmassy stuff like doing some office work. So I hope you're all very well and you're having a great start to your holiday season. For myself, for Ray Mattis, our composer, for my producer, Dan Wilder, I will talk at you later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.